Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Quality of Life show with Nancy and Lisa, publishers of Big Blend Magazines. Today, we welcome social science researcher and relationship workshop assistant, Carolyn Lee Arnold. And she's joining us to talk about her debut memoir. She's got a second one already in the works, I'm just saying. But her debut memoir is called 50 First Dates After 50. All right, we love this because she really did like a whole experiment, and then she found love too through it. So it's really cool. It is out now through She Writes Press, and I encourage you to go to her website. It's Carolyn Lee Arnold, and that's Carolyn, C-A-R-O-L-Y-N, and Lee, L-E-E, because you can do it different ways. And I'm just always promoting how I can spell or not, and half the time can't pronounce anything. But anyway, welcome. How are you, Carolyn?
I'm great. It's great to see you. Thank you for your Bay Area backgrounds to make me feel at home.
Well, we love the Bay Area, mm-hmm. and that's where you're based out of, and your memoir is set out there, and I'm reading
there.
And I'm like, she's jogging here, jogging there. I want to see. So I want to know. I know that you had the movie that was at the 51st Dates, and that with Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was in Hawaii, and I was thinking about this when you came up with this idea to go dating. Would you do this as a movie set in the Bay Area? Because
Definitely, I would love it. It's got a lot of great settings. I mean, I did a lot of walks along the bay. I went to Point Reyes, a couple of beach scenes at Point Reyes.
See, you know, we love that area.
A lot of strolls in the Green Hills with some of my dates, or strolls mm-hmm. along the bay. This would be a very visual Bay Area movie. Bay Area would be a big character in it.
It could be a TV series, because mm-hmm. you could just keep dating. Netflix. The Netflix special.
50. Yes, I could. 50. Well, 50 would take up a lot of seasons, wouldn't it?
And yeah, I know. You like, make a ton of money. It's like right. 50. Yeah, when I read 50 and I went, 50. Oh, I'm tired already.
I don't think I've even been on. No, I don't. That's a lot of dating.
And that's a lot.
You have to kind of be like, there's so much work that goes into it. But I have to bring this back. This actually does connect, you know, that movie was set in Hawaii. And this is where it starts with your ex-boyfriend. But you guys you had a long distance relationship between the Bay Area and Hawaii.
Yeah.
And he wants to go off traveling, and that's that. But even a long distance, it was kind of interesting because it sounded like and this is a place I think all of us get stuck in at some point, where we stay with someone because it's comfortable, instead of going, is this really the right one?
Right. Right. And it was comfortable. I had a very busy life. I saw him once a month. The airplane fares were very cheap back and forth between Hawaii and Oakland at that point. And I was working hard. I was helping with relationship workshops. I had a big circle of friends and a house to take care of. And I loved seeing him once a month. And we talked on the phone about every night. It was actually a nice equilibrium for me at the time. But then I got to the point of wanting more. I was in my late 50s, and I realized, and we weren't really committed long term. We were committed short term. And I realized I really want a long term committed partner and someone who lives near me. I did want that. It got a little tiring. And I didn't want to move to Hawaii. There's not enough. I love it there. I love visiting, but I need a place that more is going on.
I want to see, to me, my ideal like relationship is live next door or down the street.
Mm-hmm. That's
don't
great.
Be in the same house. I don't know, but there is a balance.
Upstairs, downstairs.
But this is what I like about your book, is that you learn about learning about yourself to be able to understand what you want.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was a big trial and error process. I was a researcher. I saw it as a research project. I really recommend keeping That's dating funny. As a research project, so you can have a little
That's
more distance
nice.
On it.
So do you take notes?
Well,
I
was writing in my journal. It wasn't as a note thing, but I wasn't planning on writing a book. I was just, it was part of my self-care to write in my journal. I was single, living alone. And I was writing, I wrote out my feelings, what happened on the date, what I felt about it. And a lot of loving affirmations to myself. That was part of my self-care. I also meditated with some affirmations, and I tried to keep myself optimistic. I mean, I'm naturally optimistic, but dating is a long-term project, and you have to build in self-care. And so writing in a journal was part of it.
I think that's good for all of us. You know, when you journal, it gets the emotions into a more of a balanced spot, I think, you know.
Exactly.
Because you have the highs and lows. And dating, I like what you're going from the research aspect, because dating, I think it puts us into a better balance of not being, I want a man or a woman.
Right. You
know, and we're going to talk about that. We want to know what's going on with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You did switcheroos.
But you're right. The whole research thing. And also, as we get older, I have to say, you know, it's one thing to date when you're younger and you think you have your whole life ahead of you. Can you just have fun, and you hope the right person will come along. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But when you're older and you're really sure, okay, I'm ready to settle down with someone now, we don't have a lot of time to hang out with fun Bobby and waiting for Mr. Right to come along. If we really want Mr. Right, and I also want to validate that it's fine to not have a partner. All of the things that I talk about in terms of nurturing myself while dating also work really well for having a wonderful full single life. So I want to just mention that. Not everyone has to have a partner, but if you want a partner, every weight when we're older, every date takes on a lot of weight. Like, is this the one, like you were saying, time. Is this the guy, is this the end time? Yeah, we don't have the time.
I think there should be a questionnaire that your date fills out before you say yes.
Say Nancy, I think she did this to one of her boyfriends guys that she was seeing years ago, and I'll never forget this story, because she was at this point, he's an artist, she's an artist, and this was out in the woods, and you know, we were living out in the sticks, you know, and she was getting to this point with him of, you know, you just get to this irritation point, and then you're going, am I just being catty, you know? And they were on a hike, and there were cattle, and she said, well, go on, moo like a cow. And she got him to walk on all fours and moo. And then so normally you think, oh, that's fun. He's fun and having fun. And then she looked at him and said, that's it. You're out.
That was a test. It was actually a test.
See, but so what happens when someone goes to you in the workshops and brings that up?
Well, one of the things we learned in the workshops, I was in some workshops that were specifically for learning about love, intimacy, and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And we were basically learning to look for the goodness in each person, which is a great technique for loving yourself and loving other people. And so if someone did something odd, you'd say, wow, that's really interesting about you, or something like that. Or you wouldn't say anything. We would just listen. And just be non-judgmental.
And not do the moo. Don't do that.
Roll my eyes a lot.
Yeah, that's not, there's a lot of, that would be not helpful, I think.
But I like that about looking for the good in people, because we start doing the checks and balances on someone. So you're a researcher and you're writing in your journal, but you kind of have to look, it's just simply not a match. And sometimes that's how we have to really get down to, it's not a match. That doesn't mean anything's right or wrong. It's just not a match.
Everyone has something precious to offer. It helped me enjoy the dates to just say, well, what does this guy have to offer? What do I like about him? And sometimes I went overboard with that because I could see the goodness in him and I was not seeing maybe the red flags or the things that weren't going to work out. I was a little overly accepting. But I also took good care of myself in that. Yeah. But it does help on the dates to enjoy the date. But then that's when the research aspect comes out. When you to do the research, you're gathering information. So after the date, you have to evaluate the information and say, what did I feel? What was I feeling about myself with him? What was I feeling about him? And what was the combination of us feeling like? And being a little evaluative and see, if there was something interesting there and it felt like he had a quality that I might like, or that there was some sort of connection, I would have a second date. I would explore it. I wouldn't I wouldn't rule out someone right away. My project's called the 51st Dates. So I went on 51st Dates, but I went on lots of second, third, and fourth dates to check them out and give them a chance.
How long did it take you to do this?
It was 2.5 years.
Wow, you've been busy.
Well, yeah, that's about that made sense. Well, I thought I could do it in 9 months. Because originally my ex-boyfriend, he was going traveling in Europe for, I think, 7 months maybe. And I thought, I'm going to do this whole project. I'm going to go on 50 dates and then I'll see if he's really the right one for me. And then I'll see if there's somebody better out there. That's what I was looking for. But I only got to 17 dates by the time he came back. And by then he had found somebody that he wanted to be with. And I was realizing, hey, I kind of like this dating project. I think I can find somebody this way. It might take a while.
I think it's something for everyone to kind of do is that research part. Like we were talking about the emotions, and the fact is we also tend to date potential. I think men and women do that. You'll like something and there's a hormonal thing. There is a chemistry biology thing that happens to us. Yeah. And it's just the way we are, how we were created. It's biology. We can't, mess with biology until you get to the facts, which kind of puts the emotion aside, allows you to feel the emotion on paper and then just and feel it, which is fun. Come on. It is fun to be
The attraction,
like, that's a hottie over there.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that that's like long term.
See, but that's how mommy nature messes with you.
Yes,
you know,
she does.
She's maybe looking at things from a totally different aspect than what we are.
So are you talking about attractions and hormones?
Yeah, like long-term relationships that end up in children. That's where mommy nature
is. Oh, yeah.
She's, procreate, you know, and she's looking for, strong body, strong mind. Yeah. That means the child will have both.
Yeah.
She's not looking at necessarily what is best for either party.
It's always that those hormones, those attractions are really hard to be objective about. But but as an older woman past menopause, I went through menopause at 51. I was doing this dating project at 58. I did have lust towards these men. I did have attractions, but I'm thinking it wasn't as probably as strong as in my youth. Because the reason I was in this position, I had never had a long-term partner, was because I kept following my attractions and they only lasted for a year or two with men or with women. And so that's why I was really trying to find someone that I'd really want to be with long-term. And so the fact that I was, my libido had dropped after menopause. It kind of came back because it's kind of exciting to be dating a lot of different men and meeting new men. So you're right about that pull, that sexual pull that we have. But I think I think being older helped me being able to sit back and really think about what this was.
I think I wanted to go back to also the beginning when you talk about the institute. What's it called? The Heart Institute.
The Human Awareness Institute.
I was keep going the Heart Institute even though I was reading it.
Well, it's very heart centered. That's a good guess.
Heart centered and. That intimacy part where, you were sitting across from a gentleman who you liked and you're like, ooh, and then it balanced out to become a really good friend, but you're caressing each other's face and having this intimate moment. And I'm yelling at Nancy, she's fondling faces and I'm giggling because there's no way. I mean, I would get the giggles, but that's an intimacy and that's walls that we put up and all of that stuff. And to be able to do it. And you had an emotional time, but I would have really just got the giggles. I know
really?
I would have.
Seem really strange? Did it just seem really strange? Too close?
Yeah, it's a very intimate kind of thing. And I think I would have to have been dating someone to be able to do that. But you know, when you go to a restaurant and someone comes up and plays a guitar and sings a song right to you, right
looks
in front,
right
like
at
this
your
close,
face. Yeah, in
right?
your eyes, yeah.
I'm going to giggle. I do it at funerals.
Oh, okay.
I'm not good at funerals either. So I'm not good at that,
closeness.
That's a learning thing,
Yeah.
That's an intimacy thing that it's like, wow, okay, you're doing that. I would have giggled. I probably
gone through
with it, but it's a giggle. I giggle first. That's just who I am.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's fine. People do have all sorts of different reactions. I think one of the reasons I included that workshop in the book, I wanted to give people a glimpse of what a personal growth workshop is like and what it feels like. Because I think that the idea of relationship workshops or personal growth or intimacy sounds a little scary from the outside. And I wanted to see, I wanted to show people that it's actually really a loving, sweet thing. Even if you giggle, it's fine to giggle.
I think giggling is always good.
Yeah. I know this. Maybe I didn't portray enough laughter in those workshops.
No, you did. But for me, I'm just like, wow. Okay. That would be for me putting myself out there. That's a very, So I commended you on that. And when I'm going, this is cool, you know, but I think it's something where we don't sit. I think you have to go to kind of like an external place to be able to look in. You can't always sit in with yourself, even if you're journaling, until you go from the outside and have someone to look from the outside. And sometimes families aren't the best for it. You know, no offense, Nancy. I'm not saying anything. She warns me. She's like, you don't want that one. No. And she's had to get me out of a lot of interesting situations. I'm just saying.
Well, you two are obviously a good team, but
oh yes, but not always. Well, apparently, I break up with people on holidays. So
yes, absolutely.
I'm very good at it. And then she has to be the second one going. When she says it's over, she means it. So, Valentine's Day, Christmas, birthdays, yep. New Year's, it's all Easter, Thanksgiving. Yeah. It just happens to be. I'll write a memoir about it one day about how it happens, but it just was one of those things.
That could be a good story.
But I think it does take these external things or situations and classes to look in, because when you're sitting with yourself, you're too close. It's like you need to go in an airplane to see what land looks like.
I agree with you, Lisa. That's such a good point. That because we think, you know, everyone says, well, in order to go dating, you need to feel good about yourself, right? And so, but you can't just go into your room and give yourself a lot of affirmations. I am beautiful. I am dateable. I am lovable. That is good to do, but you can't do it in a vacuum. Mm. And one of the values of going to experiential workshops, in which the purpose is to be learning how to be more loving with people, is to get that feedback from each other. So we were learning to look for the goodness in each other. And so that meant someone was looking at me and looking for the goodness in me and then telling me what they liked about me and vice versa. So I got to feel it's the experience of really feeling people appreciating me and loving me in a way that would replace the critical messages that are in my head. Everybody's head.
Yeah. We're all negative, right?
Yeah.
No.
I think if somebody told me that I was supposed to fondle somebody's face in a workshop,
it's not that way. She doesn't write it that way. That's just
I know, but I'm just saying, I probably would have pinched the cheek and went, who's a good boy?
I think you have to be in the situation. That to me, that's intimacy and learning and opening up in a safe space too. You're in a
very safe space and trying out new behaviors. I mean, it might have seemed a little awkward at first, but then when you try it out, you find out it's good. I wanted to say one other value thing about the workshops because one of the things they value besides appreciating people is choice, that everyone is at choice in every second. You can make a different choice. So that applies to if you're in an exercise that you're not comfortable with, you can leave, you can get out of it. You can say, I think I don't want to do this. Or you can just watch other people do it. It's not just for the workshop, but it's teaching us in dating every moment. I can make a different choice. I don't have to stay in this situation if I don't like it.
Lisa and I used to work for a company that sent us to this workshop, and we had to do, remember the trust fall?
Yeah, you get up climb on a pole and then they
climb
catch
up
you.
The pole, and then you just fall off and you trust the people down below to catch you. Now, you know, you're not going to get hurt because you have a harness on.
Yeah.
But there's still, it's a little nerve wracking.
There are a bunch of salespeople. If you threw a $20 bill, they're going to run for that.
Yeah. Right before that was you go to fall, somebody goes, quick, throw a dollar bill out. And that meaning that the team would run and get the dollar rather than catch you.
They would catch you,
but there was that last second before you did the fall that people had to mess with you. And that workshop was, there were times I thought it was pretty horrific, actually.
Yeah. Did you end up learning trust from that? Did you feel the trust? Did it do?
Do you think we learned trust from Lisa?
No, you know what? I don't think
I trusted the harness.
I think when you're forced to go to these things, it doesn't, you're not in alignment with it. If you're not ready to receive.
Good point.
You know what I mean? Then you're not ready. There were aspects of it that we thought were cool. There were like some things I did learn, but I wasn't going to take in certain things because I just wasn't in that moment for it. But I think everything you experience, it's like, oh, I'm not ready for this. Well, it's going to happen anyway, because that's the way life is.
Yeah.
So it's up to you at that point. Are you open? Are you closed? And at that point, when you're forced into this is your career, your job, and if you don't do this, well, now it looks poorly on you and you're already afraid of heights. Excuse me, Golden Gate Bridge. You're going to force me there. Okay, I'll do the challenge.
Wow.
I'll get through it. But you're kind of going in with an already resented kind of attitude.
Yeah.
And when it comes to growth, I think that should be a personal choice. Our bodies are a personal choice. I'm just saying.
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah, and that's
this is a California book.
It's a California book, and choice is huge. And so I just wanted to put a plug for this type of this workshop with the Human Awareness Institute, HAI.org. Mm-hmm. If people want to look into it, it's all over the country. But there are other workshops and organizations that teach these kind of things, from communication to intimacy to communication for couples or singles and how to have a good relationship. I have several references, other organizations on my website if people want support. But the point is, dating is a long-term project. You need support. You need to have a community or group of supporting people around you in order to do it. You can't just do it alone.
I think it is important because it's a huge part of life for
people.
Relationships and making the choice. I want to have a relationship. I don't. Or sometimes you take time off for yourself. You do whatever you need to do. But I think also what's interesting is your beginning of life and deciding, okay, you've got to think about how we were raised and the cultures we are in, the values we were taught, the traditions, the places we are raised as well, also have a huge impact. And so for you, you went, hey, I'm going to the Bay Area. You know, it was like hippie dippy, let's go. And at that point also, you were also leading a lesbian lifestyle and then said, okay, I'm done with that after 18 years. So I wanted to bring this up because I know that you've got a second book coming out with this.
Yes,
right?
I'm writing that. Yes. I did. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so for a lot listening, we're going to go, what do you mean she just went, hey, flip the switch? And so a lot of people aren't going to understand that part of it.
Yeah.
And because we're having this dialogue in this country and right now of people understanding people's choice. It's, again, going back to choice and who you are, back to biology again, too.
Yes. So should I just give the short version?
Go for it.
Okay. I started out, as many people, heterosexual, and I was dating men and seeing men. But I landed in Berkeley, California in the early 1970s, the height of everything, the political movements. Mm-hmm. I landed in the free clinics. We were trying to change the healthcare system. And also this is the beginning of lesbian feminism. Feminism was strong and lesbians were starting to come out and gay men were starting to come out. It was starting to create a safe space for women, for positive lesbian and gay existence. So I found out by working with lesbians in the Women's Health Collective, I found out that my body was bisexual and that I could be attracted to women. It, you know, that's not true for everybody. I just, by being around really handsome and beautiful women and who were more interesting in the 70s, the women were more interesting to me than the men. The men hadn't quite caught on to feminism. The baby boomer men weren't quite with it yet. So I was just fascinated by the women and I thought it was a more interesting life. It was a more interesting life. And so I really wanted to have a woman partner. And so I tried for 18 years. I dated a lot of women. I was in a women's household. I learned women's studies. I studied women's studies. I never found the right woman, but I had a lot of fun. The lesbian feminist culture at that time was great, wonderful music, wonderful gatherings, music festivals. It was a cutting edge politically. It was just exciting because we were redefining what it meant to be women. We were women and you could have relationships without the gender component. You didn't have to worry about someone being sexist. We were just all equal women. And then you could just deal with personalities. That I love, the gender-free personality thing with relationships. But I found out that women have a range of of personality traits just like men are. There's some wonderful, loving women, and there's some not so great women. And and so it actually kind of it made me less idolized. I idolized women less. Women are just like people, and there's a range of people, and I didn't find my person among the women. And so,
I think that's something in feminism too, to look at, is like, you know, we want women's rights, we want equality. And also, I always talk about feminism can only get us to the equality that we deserve if women work together in a better way, because we do attack each other, and that doesn't help. And you also, like, if you look politically, whether it's locally or nationally, I don't want to talk politics, but you don't want to put a woman in just for a woman that could ruin, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
It's that balance. Women,
we want to look for a woman whose values we agree with also.
Just
like a man.
No matter what.
So, what it did, so I gave up on women, and I realized I was in a milieu. I started a new job in which there were a lot of men, and I realized I was still attracted to men. And what I realized is now I'm in my 40s, 20 years later, and the men are interesting. They've been through the feminist wars with women, and they're wiser, and they're sadder, and they're more vulnerable, and they're more interesting. And so it was like I took a 20-year break from men and came back, and they were wonderful, and I was very happy to be with them again. I still didn't have very good relationship skills. So 10 years of trying to date men, and again, relationships that were 1 or 2 years, because I just went with my attractions. And that's when I went to the Human Awareness Institute to figure out how to have better relationships. And I just really recommend that for everybody, even if they're already good relationships, because it just gives you a lot more tools for communication and loving people. And also, for those of you single and dating, what better pool of men or women can you find than a group of people who've chosen to work on their relationship skills? It's
that's
like ideal. Those are the people I wanted to be with. And there's thousands of people who've gone through those workshops. So especially in the Bay Area. So there were a lot of people to choose from. And that's about half my dates were from people I met at those workshops.
I mean, that is something, that's a good point, because really schools don't really teach you too much about relationships.
No.
That's kind of on the back burner. It's like you're supposed to do this, this, and that. And if you're a woman, you're supposed to be like this. If you're a guy, you're supposed to be like that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much how it rolls.
Right.
And I don't know how much it's changed. Like in the modern day school today, I don't know.
Well, they have communication classes, but that's more about reading and thinking. And and to do an experiential thing. Mm. And what does it feel like to be with people who are looking for the goodness in you and who are appreciating you and who are giving you choices and letting you say no and yes when you want meet it? It's there's nothing to beat experiencing things and practicing things in your body.
That's positive. As a way instead to learn, of allowing dysfunction to come in.
Right.
Because that's the thing too. You know, there's red flags as you date. There's red flags. And if your hormones are doing this and like, oh, he's really hot doing this, you're going to go, that's okay. You know, we all do that. Right. And we end up in trouble. And so there are red flags all the time. If you look back and dating and, you know, all of us, and of course you've done a ton, you know, there's that part where those flags were there, and a lot of times we know we closed our eyes. We know deep down.
Yeah.
We know it.
There's that you think you can change what the outcome is going to be.
Yes.
The
hope that someone will change. Well, that's always a dead end. Yeah. What I tried to do in this book is illustrate. I start the book out with a workshop of what I'm learning in the workshop. And then I try to show how I played that out in my dates, how I practiced those skills as I dated.
You're so gung-ho. Like, to me, you're like, that's why I was like, she's really into doing this. Like, this is, you took a big chunk and you stuck to your gears on this. You know, to me, that is to do 50 dates. That's incredible.
Well, you
know,
because that's energy. Did you tell the guys that you were going to date 50 people?
I did if I had more than one date with them. If I just had a date, one date with them, you know, we met online or we met somewhere, or they didn't need to know. It was just like dating and, oh, this didn't work out. And I don't want to, we don't need to see each other. But if I saw them one more than once, or actually more, probably more than twice, I would tell them, because one of the things I needed to tell them was I was A, seeing other people, that I did have this goal of 50. And by the way, I know it sounds like I was really gung ho, but what helped me have energy was having the goal. Having a goal of 50 kept me going. That was actually a good thing, because I it felt like I could move on, and there was always a better one coming along. And so that gave me the optimism.
It's new experiences. It's kind of
Well, you like what you do when you travel.
A card system and a Rolodex, and she here's 10 points for this, 12 points for this, minus 6 for that.
It's like it's like The Voice.
It was all in my journal. The other thing I wanted to mention that might be a little unusual, this is you know, really three books in one. This is a dating book. There's a lot of great dating skills in here, but it's also a model of an older woman being sexual while dating. And and I wanted to validate women, as many of us who are older who've been in relationships are sexual and don't tend to stop that just because we're dating or while we're waiting.
You're
for
not
someone.
A spinster. Like there's right. that whole thing, like the you're a granny knitting thing, and watching TV with 20 cats and tea.
Right. And not everyone. And I want to respect women who don't want to be sexual while they're dating. That's another option. But I wanted to validate the women who are being sexual as we get older. I think that we don't have a lot of models of women being older and sexual. And I wanted to show people that it could be done safely. I emphasize safe sex in the book. I talk about how I take care of my heart. When especially when it gets broken and sad, when someone rejects me that I really liked and actually was starting to be sexual with, that can be hard. I just tried to show those skills about how I did that. And going back to your question about, did I tell the men? One of the reasons I had to tell the men if I had a few dates with them was I had ongoing lovers that I had picked early in my project who I knew would not be my partner for various reasons. They were too young. They were busy doing other things. But they were sustained me. To have men that I knew were my lovers along the way made me put less pressure on the dates to be sexual with them. But I had to tell the men who I was dating that I had, okay, to have these other guys. And some of them were fine with that. And some of them were definitely not.
One got mad at you.
Yes. On the first page.
Only
of
one.
The book. Actually two. two. Not pleased, but well, that's as far. So those are the men that I would have gotten a little farther with, who I would have been seeing a little bit longer. And one of them didn't understand why I didn't stop seeing these other people once we started seeing each other a few times. He was doing what I call monogamous dating.
Right.
Like you're dating and then you become monogamous while you're trying to figure out the relationship. And I was doing non-monogamous dating, meaning
you could date who you want. Guys do, really.
Well, okay, but then that brings up a thing too of stereotypes, because there are things that happen. Men have always had these, hey, we can do this whenever we want kind of thing in historically speaking, right? But through your relationships and through the workshops and the dating, did you find that there were stereotypes for women and men that were incorrect and just over kind of blown out of proportion? Or is it coming from, or are those stereotypes for those who haven't been working at it? Pre workshops and learning the intimacies and the care of others, you know?
Well, I guess I think because of my lesbian background, I didn't see it in terms of stereotypes. One of the values of having been with women and seeing them as diverse people is I just see men as diverse people. I don't usually actually see their stereotypes. I say, this man is a little too aggressive. This man is is passive, or this man is, I just see the different range. And so the differences for me were in communication. It was that about sexuality. Some men were not okay with me being sexual with other people when I was dating them, and also communication. I tend to be pretty direct and honest, and a lot of people aren't used to that. And men are not used to that. There was one date, where he was taking me to a restaurant, and I said, I don't really like that restaurant. Could we go to another one? And he said, no, we're going to this one. And I said, could we talk about it? Which a friend of, most men I knew would talk about it. At least he said, no, we're not talking about it.
And wow.
That's a
big red flag.
It was a big red flag, and it was a blind date. And it was, and I carried it through because he was a friend of a friend, but actually it's not detailed in the book. But the point was, he did not have the same communication style I had. I didn't label it as he's a ex so-and-so man. I just thought this guy is too controlling and mm-hmm. not for me. And he doesn't have the communication skills or the flexibility that I'm looking for.
I dated a guy who was like, you know, you were too long at this place. Why weren't you here at this time? And trying to dictate was he a Christmas dump? Yeah, I dumped him. Yes. Anyway,
gonna add to that story.
Well, because I didn't want to have to do the family stuff.
He brought his mother over to talk to me about Lisa dumping him on Christmas.
No. So I was left to dump him.
On Christmas?
Yes. On Christmas.
You had to defend Lisa to the guy's mother
Christmas? I did it good. I just slammed the door.
But my friend was there and her dog was growling and wanted to go and take her out. And Sparky,
closed the door.
It was hysterical.
I'm like, really?
But those are the things you're just like, what? And there's reasons why things don't work out and you say goodbye, you know?
Yeah.
But I think those red flags are there. But then there's the ones who, there is the ones where you go on this big elaborate date and then they expect, you know, hey, well, now I bought you this. Now you've got to repay me this way. And that's not an intimate thing. That's not the way it should be.
Well, that goes back to choice. And as women, really getting deep down that we have a choice every minute. I think in one of my dates, I was actually stroking somebody's face and kissing somebody. And he was liking it, but he wanted to make love. And I said, I'm not ready to make love. And he had to, he said, well, but if you stay, I'm going to want to do that. I said, well, I guess I better go. So I exercised that choice. And I know that sometimes in that situation, we've been taught as women to just keep, you know, go with what the man wants. And so it takes a lot of learning to, and confidence to be able to say, no, this is what I want. This is not exactly what I want.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, and I think the stroking of the face is intimate. I mean, that's just a very intimate. Yeah. That's incredibly intimate, you know? Uh-huh. So you've already made a step, you know what I mean? So to me, that's a step. But there's also been joy. I mean, the dating is also supposed to be super fun. Like, you know, walking on the beach, having conversations. I always think the conversation of finding common ground is cool until someone decides, oh, you like this. Well, I like this too. And you're like, just be honest. I like chocolate ice cream and you like vanilla, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so there's that part where I think, and maybe it is an experience level of being around a block enough and doing the workshops, like you're saying, that you get to that authentic place. And that is where I think the crux is of dating and relationships is, if you're not someone who's being authentic and kind, then then you're out. It just isn't going to happen because it'll be an ugly surprise later. Just even down to whether or not you like a certain ice cream.
And it's fine. I think it's going back to what you said before. It doesn't, just because you don't want to date them more doesn't mean there's something wrong with them. Mm. And so one of the, you know, we need to be, when we reject someone, we need to be kind and say, well, what we do like about them, but just saying it's not really a match. For me, and certainly some of the men said that to me. They said, you know, you're really nice, but you're not a match. I don't see us going anywhere. And I had to accept that. They know what they want, and I know what I want. Or I was actually trying to discover what I wanted. But we have to trust that each person knows what they want. Now, when you get people who are, you know, saying things that seem like just to be people pleasing, and that's confusing. That's very confusing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it doesn't really help.
And then you lose your sense of who you are. That's not integrity. Yeah. You know, I look at it as travel, you don't know if you're going to like the place until you get there.
Right.
And
right.
when you're there, we'll see, because we also go with a tourism brain of, you know, if a community needs to clean this up or do this and that, so we're into building communities through responsible sustainable tourism. So it's a little, we go in with kind of an adventurous spirit at the same time with a little bit of a critical eye, not a little bit,
we're discerning.
Very nice, very good word. And So we go in that way. And even if there's a bunch of negatives, we are always looking for the positive. And right. that is something mm-hmm. that you can find, but it's got to have that sense of place. And if a community has lost its sense of place and just does something for popularity that is off kilter to the town, like if you put in a series of fast food brand stores in a historic downtown district, you've now mm-hmm. lost it. You've
yeah.
who you are, your integrity, your mm-hmm. authenticity. Mm-hmm. And so it's very similar to for us in that way. I know it's
yeah, it is. It's the same skill.
It's an adventure skill. And you won't know yeah. until you yeah. get there. And if you go, well, this isn't a match for me because I don't want downtown fast food. I want the historic charm. Then yeah. you go, well, I was there. I had a good time with this part. This part sucked. Too many suckings on that. So I'm going to the cool part, the little historic uh-huh. downtown I want, uh-huh. if that makes sense. It's just that everybody learning of, you know, where they are. Right. But I think your book is very timely. Now we've been talking about this whole thing with COVID and people having these reflective times mm-hmm. to discern. There's online courses, there's reading yeah. material like your book to mm-hmm. really start to think and yes. time to journal. Mm-hmm. They're changing. People are quitting jobs and starting businesses, well, you know, working less and having more quality of life. So I think yeah. your book is timely for people to mm. not only seek a partner, but remember to be kind and get into who they are.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. Yeah.
There's a constant reminder right now because of the pandemic that everybody is at risk, whether you've had injections or you're masking or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a risk out there, and there's always a risk, but this is more publicized. I mean, you can walk across the street, be in a crosswalk, and still get hit by a car. So there's always a risk.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But now this is like in the press. I mean, when do you not hear about any newscast that doesn't say something about the virus, the pandemic, the this or that? So it's in your face all the time. So all of a sudden, your length of life is in focus. Are you going to get it? Are you not? If you do get it, are you going to get past it? You know, so.
And how can you make your life the best you can mm-hmm. while you
exactly.
have it?
Exactly. What are you going to do with the time that you have? Are you just going to sit and watch soap operas?
Netflix?
Or are you going to learn something yeah. new? You know, are you going to yeah. learn something new, get a new skill, uh-huh. fix up your home or whatever it is? What are you yeah. going to do with the time? And how meaningful is it?
And some people are ready to try looking for a relationship, especially if they've been mm-hmm. single during the pandemic. I was kind of hoping the pandemic would be over by the time my book came out, because it's a very, it's a pre-pandemic dating book. Right. But I think all the dating skills can be used. You know, as you know, people have been very creative about dating online with Zoom. And mm-hmm. and I think people have because of the caution and the risk, it's slowed people down a little and let people kind of get to know people before they even see them in person. Like
exactly.
get to know them on Zoom.
It's like, and who's under mask number three?
Well, yeah, it's true. The Zoom thing is really good because you're uh-huh. having the body language and mm-hmm. communicating, yeah. and you can still go for a walk on the beach and wear
walks
a mask.
Yes, exactly.
You can, or, you know, I'm back in the Bay Area, you know, go to Point Reyes, go yes. see the sea lions in February. Yes. They're out there, you know,
yeah.
but it's, you have all of there. People are, and they're able to do it in that slower format. And maybe even through family gatherings that are intimate mm-hmm. and small and things like that. So I think your book is well-timed.
Thank you.
I really do. Mm-hmm. I think because people are reflecting. And I also know we've had a generational change. In fact, I was talking with one of our experts mm. about this today. We have a generational change going on where people have worked. You've got the mm. boomer generation going, okay, now I'm kind of like, I don't know where the boomer, are you boomers now?
I'm
don't
a boomer. Know anymore. I'm You're a boomer, yeah.
But,
yeah.
but at this point, a lot of times, women and men have worked, maybe raised a family and maybe stuck with all of that work and really not had the time to have the right partners. Maybe they've lost a partner.
That was true for me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that you get to that point of who am I and only
then what am I doing?
Yeah, people are starting second mm. and third careers. Like we know, like we've stayed mm. during this pandemic, we pet sit as we travel. which mm-hmm. is awesome. We get to hang out with animals all day.
It's so cool.
And, you know, we meet all these cool people. Yeah. And we also stayed in a lot of bed and breakfast because it was a safer way of travel. And mm-hmm. majority, I would say 90% out of over 30 bed and breakfasts in just under 2 years were people with their second and third career right. and something that they wanted yeah. to do together, yeah. you know, as a couple. And so you're looking at this changeover generational, but also, you know what, we want to take time for us as a couple. The kids have flown the coop. We've done our crazy mm-hmm. hardcore career. Let's do something fun together. So a lot of people are in that mode now where they do have a lifespan. Just don't get COVID or
yeah.
anything else.
Yeah.
You know, you
yeah.
do have this lifespan of we are living longer as human uh-huh. beings.
Oh yeah.
You can have fun. Like I know I'm not going to be dating until I'm like, you know, 60. Honestly, because mm-hmm. I'm doing something else that is my time.
Yeah,
that's my yeah. choice. You
people
know?
Do what they need to do yeah. in their own time. And some people are really focused on career and some people are yeah. really ready for relationship. And some people, and I also just want to put a plug, and you said something generational. I don't think people younger than us, I don't think anyone is really taught, as we said, about good communication and how to be mm-hmm. honest and how to be vulnerable and how to be intimate. And so I do think that my book is good for people under 52, even though it's called mm-hmm. After 50. Mm-hmm. I think that people, I've gotten the feedback that people under 50 get a lot out of it in terms of dating skills yes. and a perspective on dating and a perspective on dating to learn about yourself. Mm-hmm. It's a self-discovery process.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think, you know what, I always think it could be just if, depending, everyone's got a different situation. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
It's oh yeah.
Everyone's in a different situation. That's something to always remember about new relationships, whether it's platonic or a relation, you know, a romantic mm-hmm, relationship. Mm-hmm. Everyone is, and I think it's part something we all forget. Everyone is growing at a different stage and in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, yeah, we're all trees, and I'm going to branch out in this and this. You're going to branch out there.
Yeah,
okay.
Like a tree analogy.
Yeah. Well, tree, I always yeah. do the Khalil Gibran thing where you're like, each person is their own branch of the tree, and then they get to have mm-hmm. one trunk together or one branch that is united.
Yeah.
So you can be separate and then still have unity, but allow people to be separate. That's something I've always seen growing up is, I'm older now, but growing up was that couples would not allow each other to have their own lives.
Yeah.
So I wonder when you get over 50, if we've now got past that thing of, I want to be with him every single moment.
Definitely.
And I'm going, hell no.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but my partner and I do not live together. We live separately. We live about 30 minutes apart. That's and awesome. we enjoy being each other on the weekends, on long weekends. And that's mm-hmm. a good balance for us. And that was part of my discovery. And that's the point also about my book. You can create the relationship you want. You don't, mm-hmm. I'm not saying people need to do what I did or create the relationship I had, but I'm hoping that they see it as a model for exploring. Well, what do they want? What's important to them? And what kind of person would they like to be with? And I also want to put in a plug, look, for, apparently men like to read my book too. My partner says,
I would think,
you should
yeah,
be pitching this to men more. And in fact, my men friends are really enjoying it because they get to see what women are thinking while we date.
Exactly. I think that's important.
It's
you know, you get brownie points for actually thinking that way because a lot of men in the past, I mean, we are on a cusp of a huge change as men and women and mm-hmm. how we deal with each other and what we think about each other. I mean, I remember just watching my grandmother and my grandfather and thinking, what? What are you doing? Because, I mean, the subservience of women to mm-hmm. men has been, I mean, it's age old. And women are climbing definitely. Out of that, and some men can handle it and others can't. Some mm-hmm. get angry. Some mm-hmm. really don't understand. But that's, you know, and it's just a thing that's going to keep happening until things equalize.
Right. And a lot of people, older men, some of them are stuck in those old ways. Yeah. And some of them know they are, and they're trying to get out of it. And they're very mm-hmm. earnest. I saw a lot of men, older men, really sincerely mm-hmm. trying to relate to women in an equal way.
But it's how we were brought up. Like, I know when my dad told me I had three choices if I was not going to go get married right away. Mm-hmm. My three choices were be a school teacher, be a nurse, mm-hmm. you know, and or work for the Red Cross.
Oh my God. I only got the first two. I didn't get that Red Cross one.
Yeah. Wow. I know that. And I'm like, oh yeah. And then, you know, I started out as an insurance adjuster and he just was like, what?
Good for you.
So you broke out. Do you have a business brain to do that?
So you broke out of that expectation.
But great. And I think, of course, yeah, I'm older, so that follows. But for younger girls today, I mean, Lisa certainly didn't grow up that way.
Well, yeah, I was surrounded by it, though. Yes. I grew up in Africa and in Kenya, England, mm-hmm. South Africa. And growing up, a lot of my friends were, I mean, we all had our little boy crazy moments. So I'm not going to say I didn't go through it, but they a lot of people were getting married right at, there was that whole, you know, married kids, this is the plan. And I dated and 6 months, get rid of it.
You had good coaches, it sounds like.
No, I'm like you about the every year, like that's enough of that. I thought, and really it was 6 months mm-hmm. of just, oh, I think I'm bored with this. Should I keep on? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh boy, mm-hmm. you know? So I've done that whole mm-hmm. thing, but it's like, it was like, if you do not have a worth if you do not have a man.
Exactly.
It's like, you'll never get a man. I've been told that. That you will never, mm-hmm. I remember once when we lived up in the mountains, a lady coming up and saying, if you keep working with your mother and being like this, you will never get married. You will never find a man. And I said, really? Cool. Meantime, I was dating I was having a good time. But and I just looked at her, I was like, what, are you jealous of our relationship? Which a lot of women have been
mean about
us, which is, and then there's a majority are like, wow, I wish I could travel and do all that with my mom or daughter, vice versa. So but there are some who are just like, you'll never get a man that way. And I'm like, mm-hmm.
Those are hard messages. It's hard when it's great that you had that reaction, like, so what? You know, like, that's not a bad thing.
Well, I make my choices. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know,
but sometimes those messages land hard inside ourselves mm-hmm. and we mm-hmm. have to figure out how to get them out. And usually it's by being around like-minded people who do not feel that way. And it's finding a community that supports your own values. Mm-hmm. And that's what I found by living in the Bay Area and also by going to those workshops and, everything else I do around
here. Because you have mm-hmm. to, because you can't always, you also can't stay in the, like, it's like politics, right? We have our left, we have our right, and everyone's fighting where does the communication come in? You know, and you do want to stay on your side where you can breathe. You need to breathe and say, it's really nice when you're with someone who has the same values and thoughts and beliefs. But if we all stayed there, how do we bridge gaps?
Well,
so we have to have that balance.
Exactly. We need the balances. But I think in terms of your intimate support level, I think we need a supportive bubble of people who affirm our worth and our value and our goodness. And then we can go out and fight our battles there.
That's what I'm saying. You have to have your safe place. Yeah. You have to have the place. That's what I was saying. You have to have that community where you can breathe and just be. And then it's like, okay, we're going to have to like cross this line here. And then you have the energy to do it and the patience and not have the emotional drama. And I think a lot of us, just whether it's relationships, you know, romantically, personal or not, I think we're running on high emotion.
Oh, especially now.
And that's where I think, you know, the dating part is something people can grasp and want to do. And I think that's why I'm saying the book goes further afield. And so it's been so cool to have you on the show.
You are so fun to talk to. I really appreciate you understanding, and you certainly have a great model of a life, you two. And that's what we want. We want to create the life we want to create that works for us. And that's what it's all about. And
that I feel is like
you two
freedom.
Have done that.
That is true freedom. And that's what we should all have. That ability to do that. So I appreciate that messaging in your book as well. So everyone, again, Carolyn Lee Arnold, it is 50 First Dates After 50, all through She Writes Press. Go to carolynleearnold.com, and that's CarolynLee on her website. She's on Facebook and Instagram as well. Go to Amazon. Are you on bookshop.org?
Yes, bookshop.org and indie book. indie awesome. Something. Mm. But yeah, we want to support independent bookstores. So try to get your book through that. I can actually mail people a book plate with my signature on it if they get it from somewhere. I also have a bookstore you can get my signed copies from. It's all on my website. Awesome.
We just found out about bookshop.org and we're opening up a store on our site where everybody, you'll be on there. We're putting everyone's books on there because they support the authors and the independent bookstores. Yes. And that's something so crucial.
Oh, that's great. Great. Mm. Okay. Well, wonderful. Thank you. So good to meet you. Thank you for having me on.
Everyone keep up with us at bigblendradio.com.